The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we are getting into a really essential handbook for anyone trying to figure out how the world actually works.
Yeah, we're looking at Paul Wilkinson's foundational work on international relations.
And it feels like a crucial topic right now, doesn't it? Global politics seems, well, overwhelmingly complex sometimes.
It really does.
Yeah.
But Wilkinson's point is key. The global system isn't just random chaos. He gives us this kind of intellectual toolkit.
A toolkit? How so?
Well, to cut through all the noise,
yeah.
You know, to understand why nations cooperate sometimes, why conflict keeps happening, and ultimately how some kind of global order gets managed, even without a world government.
Right. So for you listening, this isn't just dusty old theory about treaties and diplomats.
No, not at all. It's more like a blueprint for analyzing the headlines you see every single day.
Like trade disputes or those moments when the UN seems unable to act.
Exactly. It often boils down to this core tension. Wilkinson highlights that constant push and pull between conflict and cooperation, order versus anarchy.
It gives you that framework, doesn't it, to see beyond the surface narratives and grasp the underlying structures shaping events.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's talk about the person behind this toolkit. Paul Wilkinson, a distinguished British academic, right? Lived 1937 to 2011.
That's him, professor of international relations at the University of St. Andrews.
And what really makes his perspective stand out? Because there are lots of IR scholars.
Well, his specialization is key. He wasn't just an abstract theorist thinking about high politics. Wilkinson was actually one of the world's leading experts on political violence and, significantly, terrorism.
Oh, okay. He founded that center, didn't he? The Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence, CSTPV.
He did. And wrote landmark books like Terrorism and The Liberal State.
So that real-world focus is important.
It's crucial. It means his introductory text isn't just floating in the theoretical clouds. It blends those classic academic ideas about how states behave with the really gritty, pressing security issues.
Like transnational terrorism, other non-state threats, things that feel very current.
Exactly. He had this authority that came from looking right at the sharpest, most volatile edges of global politics.
And that mix of theory and, well, harsh reality makes the book incredibly useful. So what's the central argument? What journey does he take us on?
The core idea is that if you want to grasp modern global politics, you need to understand three interconnected things.
Okay, what are they?
First, the basic historical principles that set the stage. Second, the competing theories, the different ways analysts look at the world. And third, how the actors involved are changing.
States, but also other groups.
Right. And the whole system is shaped by that tension we mentioned. Conflict versus cooperation.
And the book's structure reflects that journey.
Yeah, it's very logical. He starts with history, lays out the foundations, and defines that central puzzle of the international system.
Then he introduces the theories, the analytical lenses.
Exactly. Like realism versus liberalism. Then he maps out the main players, states, yes, but also IGOs, NGOs, those huge multinational corporations.
And it all culminates in looking at the modern challenges.
Right. The new agenda driven by globalization, things like climate change, and this shift in thinking from just state security to human security. It's a really comprehensive roadmap.
Let's drill down into those core concepts then, because you mentioned a foundational puzzle, one idea that explains so much. Anarchy.
Yes, anarchy. And the first thing is, when we say anarchy in IR, we have to ditch the everyday meaning of just chaos and disorder.
It's not riots in the streets on a global scale.
No, not at all. Wilkinson is clear. The international system is anarchic, specifically because it lacks a supreme overarching authority.
Meaning no world government?
Precisely. No global 9/11, no world legislature making laws everyone must follow, no global police force to enforce them.
And this structure, this system of sovereign states, we usually trace it back to one big historical moment, right?
Yeah. The Peace of Westphalia in 1648, that's the traditional starting point. It established the principles of state sovereignty and non-interference. Basically, the rules of the game we still sort of play by.
But hold on, if Westphalia established absolute sovereignty, the idea that states are supreme within their borders, isn't that principle kind of broken now? We see interventions, sanctions, international pressure all the time.
Ah, but that's the core tension Wilkinson explores. Westphalia set the ideal. States are legally equal, borders matter, and crucially, there's no higher power. This leads to what's called a self-help system.
Self-help, meaning states have to look out for number one.
Essentially, yes, because there's no global authority to guarantee their survival. The very fact that interventions and sanctions are still so controversial, so debated, actually shows how powerful that 1648 idea of sovereignty remains, even while globalization and other forces are challenging it.
So the puzzle is how you get any order at all in a system with no ruler.
Exactly. How is order possible without a central authority? That's the fundamental question.
Okay. So to analyze this complicated anarchic world, Wilkinson gives us these analytical tools, these theoretical lenses. You call them sunglasses.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. Think of different pairs of sunglasses. Each theory, each pair, brings certain things into sharp focus while maybe blurring others.
Let's start with the classic one, realism. Probably the most famous lens. What do you see with realist sunglasses on?
Power, conflict, national interest. States are the main characters on the stage, and their number one goal, rationally speaking, is survival.
And cooperation.
Realists are deeply skeptical about it. In an anarchic system, today's friend could be tomorrow's enemy. So security is often seen as zero sum. My gain is your loss.
That sounds pretty bleak. And it leads to this famous concept, the security dilemma. Can you break that down? It seems crucial.
It is, and it's tragic because conflict can happen even if nobody actually wants it. Imagine state A feels a bit insecure. So it builds up its military, purely for defense, right?
Okay, seems reasonable.
But state B, next door, sees state A arming up. State B doesn't know A's intentions for sure, so it perceives this buildup as a potential threat.
So state B arms up too.
Exactly. Which then makes state A feel even less secure, prompting it to build more arms. And you get this vicious cycle, an arms race fueled by mistrust.
Leaving both states less secure than when they started, even though both just wanted defense.
Precisely. For realists, that dilemma is an unavoidable consequence of anarchy.
But if realism is the whole story, how do we explain things like the European Union or the World Trade Organization, these huge cooperative structures?
Good point. And that's where the other main lens comes in. Liberalism, it offers a more, let's say, optimistic contrast.
How so? What does liberalism focus on?
Liberals emphasize progress, the possibility of cooperation overcoming anarchy's worst effects. They look at how interdependence through trade, shared values, international institutions can change state behavior.
And they point to things like the democratic peace theory.
Right. The observation that established democracies, well, they very rarely, if ever, go to war with each other. That's a key piece of evidence for liberals.
So for liberals, institutions like the UN or the World Bank aren't just talk shops.
No, they matter. Not because they magically eliminate power politics or conflict, but because they provide frameworks, stages, mechanisms, ways for states, even rivals, to manage disagreements and find common ground.
So they don't end anarchy, but they help manage it.
That's a good way to put it. They facilitate cooperation.
Okay, so we have states operating in anarchy, viewed through realist or liberal lenses, but Wilkinson also stresses that the world stage is getting crowded.
Extremely crowded. While the nation-state is still arguably the main actor, its power is definitely being challenged, or at least complicated, by a whole host of non-state actors.
Let's break those down. You mentioned IGOs.
Intergovernmental organizations. The UN is the big one, of course. And it has that dual role, doesn't it? It's a forum for state rivalry. Think of the Security Council vetoes. But it's also this massive global organization doing development work, humanitarian aid, peacekeeping.
And then NGOs?
Non-governmental organizations. Groups like Amnesty International, Greenpeace, Doctors Without Borders. They don't have armies, but they wield significant moral authority, right? They can shame states, lobby governments, and sometimes fill gaps where states fail.
And we can't forget the economic giants.
Absolutely. Multinational corporations, MNCs. Their budgets, their investment decisions can dwarf the economies of entire countries. Their influence on global trade, labor, environment, it's huge.
All this complexity means we need to think about power differently too, doesn't it?
Yes. Wilkinson really pushes us beyond just thinking about hard power.
Tanks, missiles, economic sanctions.
Right. He brings in Joseph Nye's concept of soft power, which is much more subtle.
How does soft power work?
It's about influence through attraction, getting others to want what you want. It comes from your culture, your political ideals, your policies, if they're seen as legitimate or appealing.
So it's not forcing people, but shaping their preferences.
Exactly. It's the ability to shape the environment, the context in which others make choices. A country whose movies and universities are admired globally might have more long-term influence than one that just relies on threats.
That distinction feels really important for understanding the world today.
It is, and it connects directly to the final big theme, how the agenda itself has shifted in the 21st century, largely because of globalization.
Globalization accelerated everything.
It really did, and it brought a whole new set of challenges to the forefront, transnational challenges, issues that just ignore borders.
Wilkinson, with his background, obviously focused on international terrorism.
Yes, a prime example.
Yeah.
But we also have to include global climate change, pandemics like we've recently experienced,
Yeah.
massive financial crises that ripple across the globe instantly.
And the key thing is, no single state, no matter how powerful, can tackle these alone.
Impossible. They demand unprecedented levels of international cooperation.
And this need for cooperation, this awareness of shared vulnerability, it led to a conceptual shift too, didn't it? Beyond just national security.
Right. We started talking more about human security.
What's the difference?
National security traditionally focuses on protecting the state, its borders, its government, its territory, mainly from external military threats. Human security broadens the focus dramatically.
To protect people?
Exactly. Protecting individuals and communities from threats like widespread violence, yes, but also chronic poverty, disease, environmental degradation, political oppression. It's a much more people-centered view.
And this idea of human security, it directly fuels that whole debate around humanitarian intervention, doesn't it? The responsibility to protect R2P.
Absolutely. It raises that incredibly tough question. When, if ever, does the international community have a right or even a duty to intervene inside a sovereign state to stop mass atrocities?
It's the ultimate clash. The global need to protect people versus that old Westphalian rule of state sovereignty.
That tension is right at the heart of so many contemporary global dilemmas.
Wow. Okay, that's a huge sweep. From 1648 to R2P,
Yeah.
it really shows why Wilkinson's framework is so valuable. Let's try and boil it down. What are the, say, three most critical takeaways for someone listening?
Okay, three key themes. First, I'd say again, the persistence of anarchy. You just can't get away from it. It's the baseline condition.
So when you see, I don't know, a trade war flare up or a country ignoring an international ruling.
You have to remember there's no global sheriff. States ultimately have to rely on themselves. That self-help imperative is always there, shaping their choices.
Got it. Anarchy first. What's second?
Theoretical pluralism. This is maybe the most useful practical advice. No single theory, not realism, not liberalism, not others we haven't even covered, holds the absolute truth.
So don't become a diehard realist or a pure liberal.
Exactly. The real analytical strength comes from using multiple frameworks. Look at an event, say, a new international treaty. Ask the realist questions. Who gains power here? What are the hidden interests? Then put on the liberal glasses. How does this strengthen institutions? Does it build trust? What cooperation might follow?
Using both helps you see the whole picture.
It gives you a much richer, more nuanced understanding.
Okay. Anarchy, pluralism. Third takeaway.
Globalization's paradox. Our deep interconnectedness today is, frankly, a double-edged sword.
How so?
Well, it creates incredible opportunities for trade, communication, cultural exchange, cooperation on global problems, but it also creates massive new vulnerabilities.
Ah, because threats can spread just as easily.
Precisely. Financial shocks, pandemics, cyber attacks, extremist ideologies, they can cross borders almost instantly now. Our interdependence makes us vulnerable together. Our progress and our risk are deeply intertwined.
Those are really powerful themes. And the book itself, it has some memorable ways of phrasing these core ideas, doesn't it?
It does. Wilkinson was good at capturing the essence.
Can we share a few of those key ideas, maybe paraphrase slightly, like the one about the central paradox?
Yeah, something like the anarchic structure of the international system creates both the conditions for conflict and the necessity for cooperation. That really sums up the fundamental tension.
And there was a good one on power, moving beyond just coercion.
Right. Power in international relations is not merely the ability to coerce others, but the capacity to shape the environment within which others make their choices. That captures that crucial idea of soft power, structural power, setting the agenda, framing the debate.
Very insightful. And maybe one on institutions like the UN, a realistic take.
Yes, something along the lines of international institutions matter not because they eliminate conflict, but because they provide frameworks for managing disagreement and facilitating cooperation.
So they're tools for managing the jungle, maybe, not for turning it into a perfectly tended garden overnight.
That's a fair analogy. They help manage the inherent difficulties of anarchy.
This is all fascinating, but how does this knowledge actually help someone, you know, in their daily life or work? What are the practical applications?
Well, the most immediate one is probably enhanced news consumption. Seriously.
How does it change how you read the news?
Once you have these frameworks, realism versus liberalism, anarchy, sovereignty, you start analyzing events differently. You see a UN Security Council veto, for example. You don't just see country X blocks action.
You see what?
You see a classic realist power play happening within a liberal institutional setting. You understand the clash of principles, the strategic calculations behind it. You move beyond simple good guy, bad guy narratives.
That makes sense. It adds depth. What about for people in, say, business or nonprofits?
Huge implications. Okay. For anyone working internationally, professional strategy needs to account for this stuff.
Yeah.
Understanding geopolitical risk. How stable is this region? What are the power dynamics? How do international rules affect my sector? It's crucial.
And understanding who the players are, not just governments.
Exactly. Knowing how IGOs work, the influence of NGOs, the power of MNCs, that's vital for planning global operations. Or for effective advocacy if you're in the nonprofit world.
And there's a broader skill, too, isn't there? Just in how you think.
Absolutely. Critical thinking. The whole exercise of applying competing theories, holding realist pessimism and liberal optimism in your head at the same time, trains your brain.
To do what?
To hold contradictory ideas simultaneously. To see complexity. To understand that most big problems don't have simple, single-cause explanations or easy solutions. That ability to grapple with ambiguity is invaluable for tackling any complex challenge, whether it's global politics or something closer to home.
So, reflecting on all this, what was the biggest surprise or takeaway for you personally from digging into Wilkinson's approach?
For me, it was probably just how powerful that simple starting point of anarchy is. Realizing that the lack of a world government isn't just a background detail. It's the fundamental condition that explains so much state behavior.
Like why states seem obsessed with their relative power, why trust is so hard to build.
Exactly. Why self-help remains dominant, why alliances are provisional. It suddenly makes a lot of seemingly irrational or aggressive state actions look, well, structurally rational within that anarchic context. It demystifies a lot.
Yeah, I agree. That was really clarifying for me too. My lasting insight is maybe related. It's the need for what you called theoretical pluralism, but maybe framed as intellectual humility.
Humility. How so?
Realizing that the world is just fundamentally messy and complex, we shouldn't get too attached to one single explanation. The real skill, as Wilkinson shows, is understanding the tensions, sovereignty versus interdependence, national interests versus human security, conflict versus cooperation.
Because those tensions aren't going away.
Right. They're inherent. They're enduring. Success isn't about finding the magic bullet theory that eliminates them. It's about understanding how to navigate and manage them constantly, accepting the complexity.
A really valuable perspective for engaging with the world today.
Definitely. A great framework for understanding. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.